Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have another show dealing with metaphysics, physics, and spirituality, and you name it. Interesting stuff, and I thought we would deal with a subject which is very timely, the metaphysical meanings of the third ray, which, of course, I'll explain what I'm talking about for those of you who may not be familiar with that. But also, I want to discuss one of my favorite sets of books and some thoughts about those particular books, probably of all of the semi-mystical, metaphysical books in the world. I think that the Bailey books, Alice Bailey, that were written with her taking, we'll say, notes and listening to the thoughts of either the Tibetan master, some people call that person DK, or also possibly students of his, which I'm going to be talking about because he said something about that in these books. Those are the ones that I have the greatest, we'll say, reverence for. I consider them to be really, we'll say, chock full of valuable ways of improving one's consciousness, and just the act of reading these books can help you do so. They're very difficult, though, because they are semi-mystical. They're not fully mystical, but they're also not completely demystified. They are sort of in between, and they were written for an audience from about 1920, give or take, until about 19, we'll say, 60 or so. Within that range, those people living in that time period had the easiest time trying to grasp the material. And then progressively, past that point, it became harder and harder as people who were born, say, much past those periods of time, to be able to completely comprehend or even somewhat comprehend what's in these books. So they had about a two-generation or so life period of time, and that's okay. That's what their purpose was. They had a very good purpose in that they tried to reveal some things that were mystified in the general field of, we'll call it, ageless wisdom. But unfortunately, their time has passed. Not to say that we can't read them today, because certainly I do, and get a tremendous amount out of them. Interestingly, the master is someone who is a member of the next kingdom or beyond, who helped to dictate some of these books, states in his own statement that, hey, you know, some of what is being said in these books may not end up being true. It may not be completely accurate. And it may, in fact, be proven to be completely inaccurate at times. And why would that be the case if someone who is in Buddhic consciousness, that means they are supposedly beyond monastic or mental, which is truthful thinking, and they're thinking in beauty, they think in the ability to harmonize with their environment, creating something directly in the senses and minds of others, so a wonderful ability. Yet, why is that not then perfect? Well, you see, perfection is an illusion. We are in the act of creation, and creation by necessity means mistakes, means that you at times do not do things that are fully accurate. If that wasn't so, then we would have to have new definitions for the process that we're in. And so it's a good thing that we allow ourselves that option, you might say. And obviously it's a wise thing to say in a statement from a being who is co-authoring, so to speak, material, because that shows that that being has humility and further recognizes the real truth is that truth changes. Even if it were true 50, 60, 70 years ago, it's very likely changed to some degree in truth today. Truth is something that is for the time that it was created, not necessarily as it is today. But there are actual mistakes in the Bailey books, hundreds of them actually, that I've counted. Some of them by those who are devotees or tees of this material, and many of the people that I deal with actually are. Some of you out there, I think, are. Actually believe that these mistakes that they find, which are, they have to be real mistakes because they're inconsistencies. In other words, you turn a page, it said one thing, and now it's saying something else. Or you read a book just last month, and it said one thing, and this book is saying something different. Or usually the chapters are somewhat different. So there's inconsistencies. And what people say who usually are these devotees and or the people who will say are have a very strong fondness, which would include myself, for this material, is, well, then there must be a higher reason. So they say that for these quote-unquote mistakes. Maybe it's a test. A blind is a word that's often used by these folks. What does that mean? Well, it's an excuse for the mistake instead of saying, well, there's an inconsistency, and both of these can't be correct, so one of them is probably more correct than the other, and maybe neither one is correct. That's all I can say. That's really the test of our ability to reason and think, but it's not an excuse for the material not being correct. It doesn't change anything. Now, you can say, well, see, that's really helping us to think. Well, it might. It might. I don't disagree with that, but I don't believe that that's the reason it has occurred. You might say, well, what would be the reason? Well, the first is that even a being who is a master of ageless wisdom and is capable of understanding everything that has ever come and gone within our world may not understand everything about a future time, may not understand everything about how science is going to move one way or another and discover things in the future. And it's hard to understand that. You know, a lot of people say, well, why don't you be omniscient? Isn't that what the word means? Omniscient, master of Buddhic thought, etc. Well, the Buddhic plane is not perfect right now. And if it were, we'd be done. The universe would be over. God could go home. We can all go home. If any part, dimensional part of the universe were completely finished, we'd be finished. I mean, all of it had to be finished for one part to be. And so we're not there. We're not in that spectrum. We are in a process of creation, which is an excellent process because it helps to grow God and grow ourselves. But there's still things that are still unknown to masters and to beings beyond what we consider to be masters, etc. So all of this is part of the explanation. There is another part, though, and it has to do with the first part of God's mind, which is freedom. What is the freedom part? Well, interestingly, in a couple of places in the earlier Bailey books, and also in some other books written by another master called Moya, there's mention that a lot of the time when Alice, who was writing down what she heard in her mind, a lot of times she didn't even understand it very well, so she might make a mistake and include some of her own thinking, not consciously. She's, you know, trying to do the best she can, but she might make a mistake, and because she doesn't understand it, she wouldn't even know it's a mistake. Does that make sense? Sure, you've done that many times in your life, right? I've done it. We all have done it. And it's something as obtuse and strange as is found in these wonderful books, it's easy to get lost and not quite fathom what's being told you. So that leaves a weak link. We have Alice. Now, why doesn't somebody come in and say, tap Alice on the shoulder, say, hey, I'm a messenger from the pet master, or the master just disappear before her like he has nothing better to do, and correct all the things that she didn't do wrong. Well, the whole point of this is that she has free will, and if she chooses either consciously or because of illusions to do things that are mistakes, this is part of her operations, part of her side of the equation. And to interfere would be, in a way, to be overcorrecting. And it may be better, even though it'll introduce mistakes, to allow her to do this. And this is exactly what is described to us as the process, that she's not going to be corrected. She might make a mistake. And rarely would she be corrected on the mistake. Really. So that's part of the process. Interestingly, it was mentioned by earlier writers than even Bailey that this is one of the ways that the next kingdom functions. It doesn't try to make us only do or have correct, perfect thinking. Just the opposite. We're allowed to think in illusion, even when it's important, even when the person is writing down what a great master is saying in bated breath, as he would say, making fun of himself, like what he is saying is got to be perfect. And it's not. He used that as an example in his disclaimer about what he's saying is obviously true. Beyond that, there's also another factor, and that is, and as I was saying, it's mentioned in other master's books by Helena Rorick and others, that we find. That the master is not available all the time. I mean, fact of the matter is, let's say Alice wakes up and she says, well, I'm ready to write, ready to do something. And I'm in a great shape. And her mind has to be in a certain place to even do the challenging work she does. And she starts to write, and the master is just not available. Well, what is the backup plan? The backup plan is the master has one of his students, who usually are disincarnate beings, between physical lifetimes, who serve with him in what is called an inner ashram. A lot of times these are arhats. These are pretty advanced humans, but they're still human beings. He picks one, or they pick, and they say, hey, I'm ready. I can communicate with Alice. Is she going to know the difference? Probably not. No, she's not going to be able to tell. Her ability to sense is only at or below her level of consciousness. Above her level of consciousness, it could be 100 different people, although that's a large number, who might be at different times communicating with her, and she wouldn't know, as long as they had higher consciousness than her, because she couldn't perceive them very well. All she knows is the information's coming through, and she's trying to write it down as best as she can, being as diligent as possible. And so what happens is you read these books and they're wonderful, and one student ends, usually at the end of a chapter, but it could be another, it could be even, it can be the next paragraph, but it's usually, there's some logic to it usually. And the next one is different. I mean, it's like someone else is talking. If you really are careful and you open your mind and your heart to what you're reading, you say, "Wow, this is like different." And so that's what's going on. How much was written by the Tibetan master? Maybe half overall, maybe, and the rest written by maybe a half dozen or so of his then students, and occasionally maybe another master. So you have an amazing array of information coming into one person, because Alice is still the person who's writing everything in the case of the Bailey books, but different authors with different ideas. Now, a good friend of mine, Wayne, and Wayne, you know who I'm talking about. He's listening to us right now. Somewhere in California, I think, has brought to my attention that the subject tonight's show, the metaphysical meanings of the third ray, are being challenged by some people who are the librarians, custodians, and or devotees of the Destiny of the Nations book and other such books by Bailey. The reason I mention Destiny of the Nations is because that's the one book that has a significant contradiction. There's no question about it, significant contradiction between what Ray came in or went out, and it's in contradiction to what I've written. And I'm going to explain myself about that. But I'm going to also, unfortunately, have to prove, and I don't mean to do this in any disrespect to anyone, in a very easy way, that what is written on this page, I think it's 143 of the Destiny of the Nations, has to be in error because it's in direct contradiction to what it says on the next page. So there's a direct contradiction. When you have a direct contradiction, then you have to say, well, there's something wrong here. And people, you know, sometimes people have brought it to my attention that something I've said is directly contradicting. And when it is, I really want to know that because that means, oh, gee, I need to correct something about how I'm thinking, how I'm functioning, something. So it's my understanding that, and this comes from other sources besides me, but it's still my understanding, that the third ray, which is a very important ray, and we're going to talk about at length tonight, is moving up. This is a big deal. And I'll explain why and how, etc. And this particular book says, no, no, the third ray's not moving out. It's got to stay in for a long time. And it, even when it says it came in, is a little different than the time I say when it came in. So it's coming in. What is it coming in? Where is it moving out? This is how much it's focused on life on our planet. And rays are not focused just on human beings. They're focused on a planet if it is truly a ray focused. Now, here is the rub. In this particular book, it states that the third ray, is as it is focused on humanity, will remain in focus. That's an odd thing. Now, there's all kinds of things like that in some of these books. That changes what the meaning of a ray focus is. Because a ray focus has to be on a planetary scale, has to be for the whole planet. It affects all life, even rocks. It affects everything on the planet. That's the kind of ray focus I'm talking about, and they're talking about as it affects humanity. Well, that's a little different. That's a different kettle. And so we have a different issue right off the bat. But now I'm going to tell you the contradiction. The contradiction is different from what I just said. The contradiction is plain and simple this. In this wonderful book, which I consider a definite read for anybody who wants to better understand issues about countries more than just rays. Rays are in there, but some of the ray information I think is wrong, and let me explain. They talk about this ray that's changing, and it isn't the third ray, it's the fifth ray. Okay, the fifth ray is changing, fine. Well, 70 years approximately, a little less than 70 years before this book was written, and it was written sometime, we know this, in the 1940s, just so you know. Because Wayne had some concerns about when it was written. It's written in the 40s. There's obvious information here that will let you know that. But that's, you can check that out through other sources. So it says not quite 70 years before, the fifth ray just suddenly popped in focus. And I assume they're meaning it as a planetary focus. But again, they keep talking about humanity, which is a different issue. And it popped in focus, and at the same time, on the next page, it says the seventh ray also came in about the same time. And in too many other places, if you have any way of checking this, I'm sure you, those of you who are into this sort of stuff, you can look at it. The seventh ray came in almost exactly at the same time. I said it started in 1875, finished in 1900. Believe it or not, the Bailey books say almost exactly the same thing. The problem is you have two rays now stated in the same source or sources, the Bailey books, and especially Destiny of the Nations, that are changing at the same time. Well, There's other parts of the Bailey books that says that two rays never can change at the same time. They are always separated, and usually by decades or more of time, and preferably even by at least a half a century or so. So here we have a direct contradiction. There's something wrong here, because, I mean, it's the same book, and even among other books of the same nature, it's stating things that are impossible. They really don't make any sense. Now, you could say, well, but did you mention, Niles, that maybe their way out of this is that it's about humanity and it's not about the planet? Well, then it's not a planetary ray change. It's something about humanity, and that could be how it's meant to be interpreted. Remember, these books are mystical to some extent, and they have odd angles to them. Or it could be that Alice didn't quite understand what she was recording, or it could be that one of the Tibetan students has a disagreement with another one of his students, and they have a different thought process about the rays, or they're trying to explain two different elements of how rays work, one about humanity and the other about a planetary ray focus, which is what I really talk about. Or possibly this great master himself or one of his contemporaries just had a moment of not clear thought about the process. That's the least likely, but you've got to include all these possibilities. So you look at this and you say, oh, okay, so there's an example. And then when is this fifth ray supposed to go out again, which is another odd thing, because there's a whole paragraph on this. It says, well, the fifth ray is going to go out around sometime in the 1990s, because it said about 50 years from when this is being written, and that's, if you had 50 to say 1944 or 42 or whatever, it'd be 1992, 93, 94. Now Wayne thought it might be 2000, which is when I said the third ray was changing. So, but at any rate, that's another very strange thing. Because let's look at what the fifth ray does. What does the fifth ray do? Well, it helps us to, we'll say, discover new things about our world and to develop the race that corresponds to the fifth ray, which is the fifth race, which is us. And we're in the fifth sub-part of that fifth race. That's us again. So it's doubled that in terms of what it helps to develop. And what does it develop? It develops a thing called the Ajna Center, the sense of monastic thinking, the ability to develop stronger monastic thought. And some people think, including the Bailey books, that maybe it shouldn't be developed much further because, after all, we're using our monastic thought to be egotistical, etc. Well, that's true. I would agree with that. But is there evidence that the fifth ray went out sometime like 10, 15 years ago? And the answer is no. Actually, the evidence is the opposite. We're in the greatest level of discovery in the history of humanity at the present moment. We're discovering more things every day as far as monastically, mentally, than we ever have. Look at what is going on. I'm talking about the ability to think is improving in people, and it hasn't gone the wrong way. It's gone the right way. But the ability to communicate, the ability to use what has been thought in a way that is beneficial to civilization. Now, that seems to be getting sticky. But you see, that's where the third ray and the fifth ray come together. That's what the third ray does. We're going to talk about that. This is a fascinating subject. Fascinating. Okay, I hope I've dealt with that. And I know I spend a lot of time on it. But this is something that I think that, you know, people occasionally write me or call me and say, hey, are you really teaching the Bailey stuff? And I say, well, I teach what is my stuff. My stuff may not be the Bailey stuff all the time, but I try to incorporate what I think is right in the Bailey stuff, what I think it makes sense and can be explained without contradiction. But if there are contradictions, I'm not going to blindly, using that word kind of as a pun, I'm not going to blindly go along with what is stated in one or other of the Bailey materials and not and ignore the contradiction and ignore the issues, because that doesn't get us anywhere. That's like really playing stupid, and I don't want to do that. So I would rather be held out to be a heretic in terms of this material than to be a person who is really a hypocrite. Hypocrisy I really dislike. Definitely, heresy is okay. I don't mind being a heretic, but a hypocrite would bother me much, much more. So hopefully I don't have much hypocrisy. But, that's for others to determine. Okay, so we're going to, for the rest of the show, talk about the metaphysical meanings of the third ray. And I'm going to start by giving you a basic definition, and then we'll come back from break, and I'll go into all of the understandings I have of what the third ray is here to do and how it is going to work. And hopefully this will make some sense. So let me continue. The basic way to understand what a ray focus is on a planetary scale is to realize that a planet is developed in stages, and each stage has to do with where it is in its overall development. We are right in the middle of our overall development. We're in what is known as the fourth round out of seven. Each round develops a certain stage of how it's going to make a planet develop life. And in this case, it's physical life. Not all planets are physical. So we are in the physical world and the physical universe, and we are trying to develop life in the physical universe. And we're in the middle of it, the fourth round, and we're just past the middle of the fourth round. Actually, we're rounded the corner. We're going past the middle. And that's good. That's a good place. And we're moving faster than normal, because that is what the plan is for us to do. And so we are being helped by there being a focus of four out of seven types of energies that correspond to the chakras that are found in all things. Everything, all kinds of life forms have some type of sense, and they have a chakra that corresponds to one of seven types of energies that chakra acts as a sense of, and allows that thing, that being, that whatever it is, to be able to have some connection with its environment. So that's what this ray focus is about. Four out of seven are being helped at a time. The more focus there is, the faster things go, but you don't want to go too fast. You go too fast, you can cause a train wreck. And we'll talk about that when we come back, which will be in about, give or take, about 2 minutes from or so from right now. And I'm getting real excited to talk about this subject. I think a lot of people will find it quite interesting. Okay, we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning, this one book contains more answers, including the wise, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we are talking tonight about the metaphysical meanings of the third ray. Now, that has got to be metaphysical, huh? And it is somewhat esoteric, meaning that it's hidden from a lot of people, making it difficult for some people to understand what it's all about. I'm going to really try to make it as easy as possible. So we were talking about before the break about how the ray focus coming from beings called planetary and extraplanetary ray lords is meant to accelerate the development of the growth of life on a planet. Now, what does this ray focus do? How does it get a particular chakra in any kind of life form to respond more quickly in its development, we call it evolution, of a ray function so that it can use the energy that is a very specific type. There's seven types of energy, and they correspond to the seven different planes of existence. And they also correspond to how God divided up the universe. And so each one of these will perceive a different way that energy can interact with life and with everything else, with other energies and form, which is a condensed type of energy. All form is really a condensed type of energy. So Einstein came up with that proof. So here is the way that these beings work. They tend to plan as much as thousands of years ahead of time when there is going to be a change in focus on a particular planet from various associated, we'll call them ray lords. There's different levels. There's just some for planets, some for solar systems, some for all groups of stars, etc. And there's also ray lords for cosmic ray lords that affect the entire universe. But that's not who I'm talking about right now. And they devote more of their attention, because energy follows their thought, this energy follows their thought, to a particular planet so that as an organism is growing during its life cycle, some of it, certain senses will develop more easily than other senses. Oh. And this encourages certain kinds of life to develop on a planet at a particular time over other kinds. So it has an effect. In terms of human beings, this is true provided the human being is not functioning from an internal spiritual focus. If the person is internally focused spiritually and driven to co-create with their creator, with God, then the ray focus of these beings is irrelevant to them because they become their own ray lord in a sense, because they can refocus this energy through their own thought, which is great enough because they're using part of God's when they're co-creation, when they're thinking, and they don't need the ray lord. So this is for people and other life forms that do need assistance. But it isn't for people who are highly spiritually developed, and it wouldn't make any difference to them because they are co-creating with their creator, and this focus can be developed internally, and it isn't needed from an external source. The good news is that the less that is needed from an external source coming from a ray lord and other beings that assist the ray lord, the more that is available to those who need it, and the more therefore those who don't need it can create it for themselves. So every spiritually motivated person that is creating light or virtue in form and trying to make a better world from wherever they're living is contributing to all those who are still selfish, making it a bit easier for them to use their senses that are in focus on the planet. Now, the senses that are out of focus, there's always three of them. Four are in, three are out at the present time, until we reach the next round of life development, which is thousands of years in the future. And at that time, it could change then to five. But right now, it's only four. When a person is using a sense that is out of focus, if they use it selfishly, that sense becomes damaged relatively quickly, and they lose the ability to use it as they had used it. So they become somewhat senseless, if you could understand that. Now, if the focus is in and they use the sense selfishly, the good news is those senses diminish much less rapidly. And particularly if there's a lot of spiritual people in the world functioning that way, there's more that can be recovered by those who are acting selfishly. So it's like everybody's acting as a unit, as a one, even though they may not know that. And you can say, well, what is the advantage of all of this? Well, the advantage is to help evolution. I mean, evolution is a system created by God. It isn't created by just DNA or anything else. It's created by God. And God said, well, part of my system has to have a spiritual side because the non-spiritual side will eventually crash and burn. Now, I'm not going to get into that tonight, but someday we'll have a talk about how evolution ultimately is self-defeating unless there's a spiritual side to it. So to counter this inevitable, and I mean inevitable, failure of any evolutionary system, there has to be a conscious side that is changing it, and part of that is us, humans. We do it. We do it for the lower kingdoms, and part of it's done by souls. And some of them are group souls for the lower kingdoms, and some of it is done by human souls and beyond for the higher kingdoms. So we do it, and we're doing it as a co-participant with our soul when we're doing it with that being, and we're doing it with God when we think in God's light or God's thought. It's a wonderful system. I love it because it's so practical, and it makes so much sense. Okay, so this is how it is always done on a planetary scale. Now, you could say, well, what about all this business about humanity? And as Bailey sometimes writes, it's coming from Shambhala and this and that. Well, yes, you can alter rays as they affect countries, parts of a country. You can alter rays as it affects only humanity. You can alter rays as it affects certain types of life and not other types of life. If you're one of the members beyond the next kingdom, but actually into what is called the planetary kingdom. It's still part of the spiritual hierarchy, but it's a higher hierarchy than the one that we're talking about here. And this is mentioned frequently, and it's mentioned in the part of the book, The Destiny of Nations, that I mentioned to you earlier. So this happens, but it isn't the kind of ray focus that I'm talking about. Because I'm talking about a focus that isn't just taking place for humanity, because when a ray is focused on a planetary scale, it affects all things on that planet. It even affects non-living things. It affects rocks and chemistry. It affects all kinds of stuff. It actually changes what kinds of materials are present on the surface of the Earth, and that changes then what kind of plants are going to be able to grow, and then what kind of animals are going to be able to grow. So it affects every part of life. It's amazing. Yeah, there are actually some rocks that have more of a fourth ray focus or a third ray focus. They don't have much of a sense. Don't get me wrong here. You're not going to get a rock to get up and talk to you and shake your hand. But it does have something to do with its chemistry and what kind of crystals it might develop and all kinds of other factors that are critical eventually in how it's going to react in an organized manner with other rocks, which eventually is minerals, and the chemistry of the surface of the planet, and also deep inside the Earth that's going on. Certain types of minerals are being brought to the surface and during different periods of time. Yeah. So the whole planet is changing from the inside out. Wow. And it's all being done because of ray focus on a planetary scale. It's fantastic. Okay, so the third ray, according to me, not according to some of the things that are in other books, started to come in about 1250 A.D. And it was in more or less focus by about 1300. Now, that's about 125 years earlier than one part of one of the Bailey books says. But, you know, the interesting thing here is what does the third ray do? Because we can't really make any statements about anything without understanding what it's doing. Well, what it was doing in its beginning process was it was attempting to create civilization in humanity. Now, not in other creatures. In other creatures, it was attempting to improve communication between that creature and other like creatures, and maybe some other types of life besides that. But in terms of human beings, it has a critical element in that it brings about the development of civilization. And when it's first accompanied by the first ray, which is a rare event, it tends to create a great crisis. And that happened in 1325. And by 1350, we had what is known as the Black Plague, which is bubonic plague, for those of you who are familiar with that. And that killed off somewhere around, round numbers, about 40% of the population in any of the civilized parts of Earth. And it wiped out, on an average, that amount of people. In some places it was over half the population, in some places it was only a third, but it wiped out a huge number of people, and it caused a complete reversal in the development of civilization. Civilization had started to rebuild itself during the 13th century and moving into the 14th, which would be the 1300s. But then it got rocked, hit really hard by this event. And within just a few years, these number of people died. Now, when you have that many people die within a single generation, civilization is turned upside down, and it's torn apart. You might say, well, how is that a great thing? The third ray doesn't obviously, it's supposed to be there to build civilization. How is that helping? Well, the first ray was in there to destroy it first. Sometimes you got to destroy things that are in the way. And the third ray, enough was made of a new civilization for about close to 100 years, probably 75 on an average years beforehand, which is several generations of people, to make it so that the civilization could recover. And what was that recovery? Well, for those of us who live in the Western world, and I know that some of you who are listening to me don't, but that's okay. For those of you who live in the Western world and who were living in the Western world in a prior life during that time, that was called the Renaissance. And the Renaissance didn't start in 1425. It actually started right after, literally, the plague burned itself out because it just killed so many people there was nobody else left to kill in a way. And by about 1365 to 1370, we have the beginnings of the Renaissance. Well, that's a good thing. And we have the third ray building on what it had started to build on for 75 years or so before this terrible event of bubonic plague. Bubonic plague went around the world. Most people don't know this. It went everywhere. It was a terrible thing. And it came in waves. And there were different times, like during the 17th century, it came back. And I mean, so it's been in cycles. But the worst known historical counting of it was in from about 1348 to about 1351. Those 3 years are probably the worst on record. Terrible, terrible set of circumstances. Okay, so the third ray came in and during the Renaissance, and then after the Renaissance, we had the fifth ray coming in more and more, which was the Age of Discovery, and then within 100 years or so after the Age of Discovery, we had the Age of Enlightenment. Enlightenment and discovery all part of the fifth ray. So the fifth ray was there pumping out more monastic thinking, more the search for truth is the best way to understand it, the search for truth. First, the search for truth about things around us and the search for truth in the inner realm of our minds. And that includes one of the greatest minds of all time, which is Sir Isaac Newton, but many other scientists as well. And at the same time, the fourth ray was even in until 1675. So we have a lot of focus on many different things that we aren't used to seeing in focus in the present day, because the fourth ray develops beauty in the world, and it helps us to balance and find a balance. We don't have it in right now, and we're way out of balance. So where does this all lead us in terms of what the third ray does? It builds civilization. What is civilization? Civilization is human beings taking control of the three lower kingdoms. That's the animal, the vegetable, the minerals, and choosing to make these kingdoms extensions of their own bodies and senses, making their self into something that's radically greater than who and what they are when they are born. And that's what civilization is. Any part of civilization can be defined in that fashion in some way. And it's an expression of what it means to be human, to be us, good or bad. And the third ray helps this to develop, which is a wonderful thing because we need it. But it's my opinion the third ray is leaving us. It's not leaving us forever, but probably a couple hundred years. And during that time, it's going to right now be replaced by the fourth ray in terms of focus. But does that mean that we can't use our throat chakra anymore to sense with? That means we're not going to be able to intelligently communicate with other people? We're not going to be able to build more of our civilizations? No, it doesn't mean that. It just means that those people who are most selfish are going to find those things to be very difficult for themselves, whereas they've been getting away with being able to be selfish and make a lot of money and have a lot of material things and do a lot of harm, and they don't care. Now, how does it affect civilization proper? The third ray mostly affects things like that are big, like economies, banking, military issues, very militaristic kind of, because it's activity. But when it's unintelligent activity, it becomes militaristic. And although there are some types of militaristic actions against evil, which are not necessarily unintelligent, but most of them are. Most of them are. And then what else does it govern? Well, it governs the communications and the industry of communications, the technology of communications. A lot of what we use computers for are the third ray, is the third ray. It's technology. That's the biggest word I can think of. Technology is the third ray, and it mushroomed, and it reached a peak, or is about to peak. But as it's peaking, it's slowing down in its development. And when will it reach its final development? Well, this may sound a little trite, but I've been saying it a lot longer than you've been hearing about it. And that's sometime in the fall of 2012. Because it's the middle. It takes about 25 years, give or take. And it started to change in the spring, around the beginning of spring of 2000. It'll end sometime in the fall, the full change, the fall, actually, of 2025. And right in the middle is where it peaks. While it's peaking, the fourth ray is finally getting a little leg up. And it's going to start developing more beauty, harmony, spiritual balance in our world, but at the cost of the development of civilization, when civilization has been created in a selfish fashion. Wherever it has been expressed selfishly, we can expect something called crystallization, which means that the centers don't any longer really respond or adapt to the surrounding information. And they keep giving information from the past instead of what's really happening. And people make a lot of mistakes and do a lot of terrible things sometimes to each other and for themselves. Very destructive. Now, that doesn't mean the first ray is coming in again. It isn't, by the way. because if it were, I think we would lose way too much of our civilization. But there could be almost like events or series of events that almost are as severe as the bubonic plague. Why? Because the third ray has been in focus on a planetary scale, not just on humanity or whatever other ways you want to define it, on a planetary scale from 1250, if you start right from the very, very beginning. Granted, it may have taken 25 years before it was really starting to express itself, but we'll still, I'm willing to live with 1250 AD until now. Well, that's a long time. And it goes in and out, kind of in cycles, although you never know exactly what that cycle is. And so this is a big deal, because it is one of the primary element rays, the primary rays, that is part of God's mind. The first, second, and third rays are really part of our own being, the universe's being, creator's mind, and it is supposed to be intelligent activity, but when not expressed as intelligent activity, becomes unintelligent, forceful energies. And that's what the crystallization effect is. That's what all of this thing is coming about, is we have forceful energies going on at an increased rate among us, created by people. It's not created by things. Everybody says, oh, it's going to be natural catastrophes and this and that. Yeah, they come about by people's thought, because energy is affected by large amounts of people's selfish thinking. But nonetheless, it's the people. We are the cause of what's going to happen and what is happening to us right now. The events that are taking place, although there is an increase in earthquakes and volcanism and all these other things, but the point is that what's really the really terrible things that are taking place have to do with stuff we're doing to ourselves. Please be aware of it. So the third ray is trying to express itself now in a way in which we correct the problem. And hopefully the next 3 years or so we'll do that. If we don't, well, then more and more civilization will be taken apart. And a new civilization within another 10 years or so will come about, 5 to 10 years from 2012. And the results will be a different world, a world that has more harmony, but that harmony will have resulted from great conflict, and a world in which beauty will replace materiality. And there will still be science and still be truth, because the fifth ray, I do not believe, is going out. If the fifth ray went out at this time, we would be in bigger trouble, because the whole race would be in jeopardy. You need the ray focused. When the fifth sub-race of the fifth race is being developed, you got to have that fifth ray in there, or else we're in pretty bad shape. That would be a big problem for us. Now, could it be done? Sure, anything could be done. But generally speaking, those aren't the things that are. Now, does that mean that we're going to have to fight against our egotism? Sure, because it's by nature. We are the most egotistical of all the people that have ever lived on the planet on an average, because that's what happens when you crystallize a large amount of the population in some way, and that's what's going on right now as far as the third ray is concerned, and when you're focused on the development of monastic development. So we're going to end up with a lot of egotism, and so I fully expect that that will continue to happen. Does it mean that we won't eventually get over it? No, we will. We have to. But we won't get over it just by functioning from one particular ray focus. We'll get over it by doing the opposite, by changing our ray focus and being flexible and being spiritually motivated. Then this business about ray focus becomes less and less of an issue. There's so much more to talk about. I don't have the time. There's a lot more to talk about this particular subject. I hope I have given some degree of, we'll say, light on the subject. If you would like to get some soul balance, you can do so from the Life Balance Association. And you can call them at 602-472-5127. I'm running out of time very quickly, so I just have to tell you, if you're interested in that product, please let us know. You let those people know. It's not exactly me personally, but you can do it. And also, if you're interested in resveratrol, you can get that from foreveryoungproducts.com, 800-777-7850. Best stuff around. I'm out of time for right now. And I want you to know I'll be glad to talk about this more sometime in the near future. Until then, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.